Hello and welcome to the first episode of University Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers podcast. My name is Ben Townsend and I'm here with my brother.
My name is Sam Townsend.
And what are we talking about today?
We're going to be talking about One Hot Minute.
Tell me about it.
I'll tell you about it. It's the 1995 album by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Good.
Sixth album, produced by Rick Rubin. For the second time, I believe.
After Blood Sugar.
Yes. And, well, it's a good album. It's a great album. It's a so-so album.
Let's talk about a bit before. I'd like to talk a bit about the history of the album, but first I'd like to talk about how I first heard the album.
Go on.
And that was, I was introduced to it by you in Spain in 1990.
You're welcome.
Circa, thank you, in Cipsela.
Yes.
A family holiday where you were playing One Hot Minute exclusively.
I was. Well, may I interject? It was... I was introduced to the Red Hot Chili Peppers by a friend who gave me Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Okay.
That was in 1996, 97. Mm-hmm. 97, let's say. Then I went out and bought One Hot Minute, which at that time was the most recent album.
At that point, did you know who John Frusciante was?
No, probably not.
So, this new guitarist, it was just a Chili's album to you?
Well, I'd listened to Blood Sugar.
Yeah.
So, I knew that album. I probably wasn't like, so...
It was just a Chili's album?
Yeah, it was just the Chili's, yeah. Probably, yeah. So, I took it on, we took it on, we listened to it. And that for us at that time, well, that for me anyway, was the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Other than this other album, which I'd listened to and liked, and then gone on and bought One Hot Minute. So,
at school,
strange.
At school, I think it was in the fourth year of school. A lot of people had Blood Sugar as it was coming out.
Yeah,
it can't have been when it's coming out. So it came out in
91.
Yeah, 89. I went to school. So
yeah. 91. 92.
So that kind of time. People, maybe the third year, people getting... But I was then getting into Extreme and Guns N' Roses. And so they were playing this sparse, groovy, kind of funky album, and I didn't have much interest in it. I wanted to...
No, it wasn't your thing.
No. So that was my Blood Sugar experience. And then, the next time I knew, you were telling me about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I thought, well, I've heard about them.
Mm.
And this was completely different.
Yeah, I get... Well, that's the thing about it, is... I was listening to it. We were listening to it together. As that was there, so that was the sound of the Red Hot Chili Peppers to me.
Yeah,
at that time. So yeah, looking back on it now, you know, all the Chili's fans look back on it in a different light, somewhat critically. But not then.
I've certainly had a journey with this album, where I thought it was great when you played it to me back in the.
Back in those days.
The mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Well, 95 it came out, so... And then getting into Blood Sugar and into John.
Yeah.
I then went against... A bit against One Hot Minute. But listening to it to do this, I've got a lot of positive things to say about it. I think it's a great one.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think there are a lot of good things about it. There are a lot of things that are important in terms of the band's progression.
I agree. I think musically there's a lot of important things that I hadn't... We'll talk about it as the songs go on, but there's things that Dave is doing on this album that I've never heard John do before on Blood Sugar, or I can't vouch for Mother's Milk, but definitely not doing on Blood Sugar, but Dave is doing on One Hot Minute.
Yeah.
And it goes straight into Californication, the way John's playing the guitar. And I'm sure that isn't an influence, but...
No, and well, I wonder whether... Yeah, you know, the importance of Frusciante on Mother's Milk and Blood Sugar had some kind of influence on the way Dave played on this album.
Possibly, yeah.
Only small, because when you listen to it, you don't hear really anything of the Chili's. in some respects.
I think you can tie back to Mother's Milk on some of the stuff. If you listen to Good Time Boys or... But that wasn't John wasn't happy with Mother's Milk and the guitar sound he had, because he felt that it was being made too macho. Who produced Mother's Milk?
Beinhorn, I think. Michael Beinhorn.
Yeah, John wasn't happy with that and felt it was being made too macho, too much guitar. And then you have Blood Sugar, and then you have this, which is back to that Mother's Milk muscular guitar feel, I think.
Oh, well, anyway, all very interesting, but let's get down to it, shall we?
Okay, let's talk about the first song, which is Warped.
Song number one is Warped.
So, coming out of every time we fade back in, we have just listened to that track at maximum volume, and we're going to talk about it straight afterwards. That was brilliant.
I could tell you enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was awesome. We're sat in front of each other to give you a picture. I've got a beer on the left. Sam, where's your beer?
It's on my right.
Yes. I think that's a great song.
I enjoyed that more that time than probably I ever have. It's a great song. I've got some reservations about it.
Okay.
And those reservations largely refer to the fact that it's not a song that probably in 1990... I don't know. I'm looking at it in terms of the year it came out, how, you know, the fact that John had gone. Those things always come into my mind.
Yeah, okay.
And that's not a John Frusciante song. But... it's a good song.
What I love about the song is that intro is a great moody intro to the start of an album. So it comes in, it's a lot of great chorus from Dave. He's got chorus, he's got delay on it. It's all very, very moody. And then it goes straight in with that riff, which is unlike anything you've ever heard from the Chili's before, I think.
Right.
And Anthony's lyrics, in between talking about songs, we're watching it on YouTube on a video that's got the lyrics coming up. They're great lyrics. We all know it's about his struggle with addiction, and a lot of the songs on this album are. But they're great lyrics about that struggle and how hard it must be to be in the grips of that kind of thing.
Well, we know that during the recording of this album, he was struggling. But not only with addiction, but also with writer's block. That's something he's spoken about, you know, in the... years since the release of the album.
Yeah.
But to be honest...
great lyrics.
Great. Those lyrics are fantastic.
Yeah, they brilliant lyrics. And watching... going through the album, watching the stuff with the lyrics on made me appreciate it a whole lot more. Because I thought, oh, writer's block album. It's not. There's loads of great lyrics on this album.
Yeah, and his... you know, during this period, these are the best years of the band's lives. Blood Sugar breaks. You know, fantastic album.
Yeah,
this is a great album. These guys are at the height of their powers.
Well, you say that, but I would.
But no, just in terms of their youth, the virility. They are young men in their physical peak.
They were. Anthony was certainly virile.
There's no way that you know. These guys were performing, and the vocals are fantastic.
Yeah, they're great. They're great.
This was when he was first starting to appear as a vocalist
instead of a rapper.
Yeah,
or a rapper.
And the singing in that song is good.
It's great.
It's really good.
I love the mid late or the breakdown or whatever, because it goes. It has a build up with the ching ching ching, ching, ching.
Yeah,
ching,
and
ching,
I think...
ching, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then it comes back into the main riff. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. I think there has to be a special shout-out for Chad on that song. The drums on that track are phenomenal.
They're brilliant.
And that... I mean, we'll say it now for this song, but I think we'll be saying that again later on as well. I do think that where other members of the band weren't able to shine on this album, perhaps this was a moment in Chad's history where he was able to stand out.
Certainly, this is the heaviest drums he's...
Yeah.
The heaviest definitely. Album for drums.
And it's and some of the drums on this track on this album are just unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the outro to that song as well, I call it... I've never called this in my life before. I now dub it One Hot Minute Outro, where it completely switches, happens all the time on this album. It's like listening to a completely different song.
Yes.
But it's beautiful, that outro. And it's,
yeah, it's
right,
fantastic.
Yeah, right at the end, there's a really dissonant note where the bass sounds like it's out of tune with the guitar, but even that works.
Mm.
And it goes from a completely, really hardcore to just a lovely a bit of Dave guitar playing.
Yeah, I mean, that feels to me like, you know, and then Flea's able to get in. You're able
to hear Flea. Yeah, that's the first time you can really hear the bass, you're right.
So it's nice for Flea just to be able to, at the end of the first track, you know, that's unusual.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this is the least Flea-ish album I think they've ever done.
I feel for Flea during this album. But you're right, that outro, that's a great song. And that outro, out of all of the unlikely things that happen on this album, and there are a few, that outro is one of the ones that actually is fantastic, and it sounds really, really finishes that song off nicely.
It does. And as a track listing issue, because Aeroplane starts with a really quiet
intro,
so it fades beautifully, and a lot of these songs.
There are a lot of examples of that. Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
Okay, is that for Warped?
I think we've just about wrapped Warped up.
Okay then. Well, we're going to move on to
track number 2, Aeroplane. My life is a spike with pain, and music is my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. Somber, sweet, and sour, Jane, and music is my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. Pleasure spike with pain. That motherfucker's always spiked with pain.
Coming out of Aeroplane.
Wow.
Yeah. Flea is back.
Flea's alive and well.
A great Flea song.
Yes.
It's much more in the vein of just funk for the guitar, just chopped stuff on the verses. Great stuff on the build-up for chorus.
Great vocal.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Much more recognisable delivery from this one.
Yeah, much more of a like that.
Yeah.
Every time I say rap, I have to say this because you can't see me. I'm doing that thing with my fingers.
Yeah, I just describe it as a much more recognisable vocal delivery.
And I describe it. And I describe it as rap.
Yes,
while I wave my fingers at you.
That's why you're doing that.
Yeah. First thing to say, I think that's Flea's kids on there, or Flea's daughter Clara
is
her friends at the end singing that.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Nice to bring the family in.
Yeah, but I've gone straight to the end. Let's talk about it from the beginning.
Yeah.
As we said, leads brilliantly on from Warped.
Yes.
A great intro.
Great. Well, I don't really think there's many weak points in this particular one. So
there's not.
I don't. It's a great introduction. It's a great. There's great vocals. There's great guitar. Let's not forget that. But there's great bass, and once again, obviously, Chad is solid. Chad never really falls below solid.
No, it's because sometimes you don't notice him because he's always great.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I have done some research into this one.
Right.
Anytime, and it happens a few times on this album, there is a word that sounds like a foreign word, or a word that I don't understand. I've peered into it. Now, on this song, he says, "The star of Mazzy must push her voice inside of me."
Yes.
Now, do you know what that is referring to?
Well, it's a little bit unfair to
put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot, but I suspect it's got something to do with the star of Mazzy.
Well, In fact, it's Mazzy Star. There's a band or singer called Mazzy Star in 1993 who did a song called Into Dust. And he talks about turning into dust.
Yeah.
The star of Mazzy must push your voice inside me. And I thought, I've never heard that song. Played it on YouTube. You will know it as soon as you hear it. So obviously.
Oh, okay.
But I like to see that because when things hit me when I'm writing songs,
you
stick them in. It's nice to have influences.
Well, that, and also it's something that it's an obscure reference that people will.
Then. I wonder how obscure it was in. When did it come out? 1995, and that was out in 1992. Yeah.
But it's not only the reference, but also the delivery, which makes it quite obscure because it's not always.
Start of Mazzy must. Yeah, push her voice because she was the singer.
Yeah. Well, yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, I'll be bringing other interesting facts up as we go along.
I very much look forward to that.
Yeah, cross my arms again. Also, I think that outro solo is a lot like If You Have to Ask. It's a really similar, like, overdriven guitar sound. And Dave was using, at that point, the DS2 Boss distortion pedal, like John used on.
I thought he was.
Yeah.
I was actually going to say.
Did you pick that out?
Was that a DS2?
It was a DS2. Which John uses for and continued to use all through his Chili stuff.
Of course he did, yeah.
But
although tempted by the DS3, he never actually went for it.
And sometimes even the DS4.
Well, I mean the DS. Well, no, that's come on,
not as good as DS5. But yeah, but that's that pedal that makes that distinctive kind of overdrive sound. And I just think it's the end of the song.
Yes,
it's a solo which then peters out, and then people are clapping. And or they're singing at this, but at the end of it, if you have to ask, they're clapping. So I think
similar sound.
Yeah, and it's the second song. I think If You Have to Ask is the second song on Blood Sugar, isn't it?
Mm, deep.
Yeah, deep cut. Deep. Oh fuck! Yeah, it's the second song.
Oi!
Yeah, sorry. No, this is explicit. You.
Oh.
I have to bleep that out.
Yeah, you will.
Okay, I'll edit this later. Okay, should we?
All right. So what we're saying, we're basically saying,
are we going to rate the songs as we go through?
No.
Right.
No, absolutely not.
So we'll never know how good the album truly is.
Well, we know in our mind. And in our heart.
Yeah.
What we're saying is that is the first time on this album, although it's only the second song, but that might be a bit of a lull in terms of false sense of security for the big fans, because that was a proper Chili song.
Yeah, that very much so, yeah. That is as Blood Sugar as it gets.
Yeah. Song two, an absolute
really
cracker.
So, one and two, really good. Let's move on to song three, which is...
Song three...
It's Deep Kick.
It's Deep Kick. Both bad and so is symptoms. Panning hardball and relentless. Two boys in London, England. Two boys in London, England. Climbing out of hostel windows. Wearing gear so happening though. Come on, kid.
Deep Kick.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I think. That is a journey.
It's a journey. That song. It's a journey into the past.
Yeah. Your thoughts on Deep Kick?
Well, listening to it just then, it struck me. It's a great song. It's a meaningful song. For those guys, back in '95, they were just coming into their early 30s.
It was Freaky Styley era in 85. Oh, yeah. Did you say
95?
95. Yeah. So, yeah.
Just coming back, into their early 30s. Obviously, it's a time in life when you start to feel a little bit more, vulnerable and retrospective. And now I think that's what that is.
Yeah. That's a really good point. That's a great point. That is a song about, Flea says at the end, Flea says 10 years ago in Hollywood. And that was the Freaky Styley era in 85. It's a fantastic history of those two people. It's not history of the band.
No.
It's got Hillel in it. I think at some point, they're talking about Slim.
Mm.
That might be Hillel. Yeah, they used to go
almost certainly.
Yeah.
But it is. That's what strikes me about that song. It's a great song. I mean, there are a couple of other important things that happen in that song as well, in that Flea comes out and sings like lead vocals on the end there.
Yeah, it's great.
It's fantastic. It's great, but for me, Anthony Kiedis at that time, as we've said, was struggling for ideas, was struggling with confidence. Yeah, I've never heard in any other album for Flea to come out and sing like that.
No. And it doesn't.
And then it happens again later on in the album.
Yeah. He does. But also, I think, is that Flea mainly on the chorus? With two young brothers.
Yeah, there's a lot of Flea in this album. But which obviously...
But I think in that chorus and that song, that's Flea.
Yeah. But that's natural as well, because they'd lost John. They'd lost the major force of the backing.
Yeah.
So Flea was bound to step up.
But I think that's a great break. It really works in one beat. Fuck, what song are we doing?
This is Deep Kick.
Yeah, sorry, Deep Kick. Yeah. It really works. The break from Anthony doing that kind of really heavy delivery, and then it goes to that really big chords and Flea singing that. I love that chorus. In fact, one of the things I think about the song is it doesn't have that final chorus. It goes into the end. I could really do with it doing one more chorus, then into that brilliant Flea ending when he's essentially talking through a bit of history. I always miss that final chorus. Yeah, but it's really good.
It is, and it's not. To be honest, I'm not suggesting it's a bad thing that Flea sings, because when he sings like that,
No one else sounds like Flea.
No, but he's honest, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like with his voice, he's not trying to be a good singer.
No.
He's just delivering a message.
Yeah. I think that song works. And when I first heard that song, I didn't like it at all.
No.
It's just a really noisy intro. I just found it a big muddle. And that outro, I thought, I don't understand what this is about at all. And I just think this guy can't sing, and who is he?
Yeah.
And then, 25 years on, it's great.
I think that sort of speaks to why it failed at the time.
Yeah.
It wasn't what people were expecting, but B, it's so stoppy-starty at times. And that is only...
What, the song or the album?
The album. I think
both that song and the album are very stoppy-starty. But
the reason it failed is because it wasn't what people were expecting, and it's just... You think you're getting going with it.
Yeah,
and then you're not.
It's akin to, I think, REM doing Automatic for the People sells 100 gazillion copies, and then the next thing they do is Monster.
But,
and the casual fans don't like it.
No, but they had the same band members. You know,
that's true.
The main driving force behind this difference in sound is the fact that they bought Navarro.
Yes, Dave. Yeah. Okay, I think we should just talk a little bit now about the track that. Well, we'll finish on Deep Kick. Are we done on Deep Kick?
Yes, we're done.
Okay, so let's talk next about that transition period between John leaving and Dave coming in. So Blood Sugar is on the world tour, and John can't take the pressure or the adulation or the fame anymore and quits.
Yes.
What happens at that point to a band in mid-tour in Japan?
The biggest band in the world at that stage.
They're certainly blown up after Blood Sugar.
Yeah.
Well, they get Eric Marshall in, I think, to cover.
Yeah, well, they do their best.
Then you get Jesse Tobias.
Presumably they are contracted to fulfil certain dates.
I think they reschedule some and probably have to reschedule.
And God bless them.
God bless them, so they did it.
They did what they had to do, and then they set about recording a new album.
They did. And that album was?
One Hot Minute.
You got it right.
Now, they always have a big break anyway, don't they? So it wasn't like John had just left and they recorded this album.
Oh, I think the writing of this album was particularly difficult, though. When you got Navarro coming out of Jane's Addiction, which was... band where I think essentially people wrote their own songs, bought them to the fold, and then worked on them. Whereas the Chili's were a jam-based band.
And not only that, you've got Swan who's struggling with
the Swan that's unfortunately had to go to the dentist.
Yeah, it was costing dear
and had some addictive substances.
Yeah,
clean so for 5 years.
Yeah, good effort.
Hmm.
But then he's straight back in. So he's dealing with his addictions, he's covering it up for the band.
Jane's addictions.
If only it was Jane's addictions, then it
might have worked out.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have affected the Chili so much. But these were Anthony's addictions.
But so you've got Anthony, who's now straight on heroin again.
Yeah.
Dave, who hasn't settled into the band particularly well.
Where, if at all.
Doesn't really enjoy the writing process. I think the album took 2 years to record, or to write, and then record.
Hmm.
So that's even longer.
Same length of time, it's just two different things.
Well, what I'm going to do is say the writing process was 2 years, and
add on the recording process on top of it.
I'll add on an additional amount of time.
Say that,
so Rick Rubin's pulling out his hair. What little he had left.
He's a big fat bald man.
Yes. Now, if at this point I think, and we'll say this again in the Blood Sugar Sex Magic one, but I do want to say that Anthony said of Rick Rubin.
Oh, he did.
If Baron,
yeah, I remember that, yes.
If Baron von Munchausen ejaculated the four of us, being the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, I think this is entirely misplaced.
Onto a chessboard. This is
entirely misplaced.
Then Rick Rubin would be the perfect player to...
For that particular
board.
But that referred to the four Red Hot Chili Peppers who recorded Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
I completely understand. I just like saying it.
Fine.
Okay, so Dave's in. And the next song is My Friends, shall we?
I think we should. But will we?
Well, let's find out.
Okay.
I think this might be apocryphal, but I believe that you said that you'd gone to a record shop somewhere at some point, possibly in 1995, and the man had said that the new album by Chili was out and that My Friends was the new Under the Bridge.
Oh, yes, that is actually incorrect.
Okay.
that was Californication.
Well, they say Scar Tissue was doing.
And he was talking about Other Side.
Okay, so
great, it was close.
Great recollections.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, My Friends.
Oh, just unbelievable.
Yeah, very accessible compared to Deep Kick and Warped.
Just unbelievable guitar from the get go.
Yeah, lovely.
Fantastic vocals, great lyrics. You know, just brilliant. I can't think of anything bad to say about that song, really. It's a great song.
It's great, and the lyrics and the vocals are great, given that I think it's all studio based, though, because live they were never able to perform that very well.
No,
because it's really fucking hard to sing.
Yeah, it's very hard. I can remember, you know, when we were younger trying to sing that song.
Yeah, and I'll play it on the acoustic guitar because it starts off quite high, and then the chorus goes into falsetto, but the backing singers are singing the low bits.
It's extremely difficult, but let's not shy away from the fact that when you listen to it like we just did, it's unbelievable.
It's great. On the tour, on the 100-minute tour, of course, they've lost John, who's a great backing singer. Yes. So they had the two female backing singers. And also a man. They had a second guitarist as well. I was watching some live videos of that era.
Yeah,
they had someone who looked a bit like Hillel Slovak. He was doing backing singing and two girls, which I think took away something from the live experience.
From the live experience.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think we always want to see the Chili's just playing four people, making a lot of noise, sounding good. But when you're not playing full confidence, which they certainly weren't at this point.
Nah, fair enough.
It's not possible. They were just padding out, I guess.
Also on Planet Live, Dave would use a Parker Fly guitar, which was an electric guitar. It looks outrageously bad, but it mimics an acoustic guitar sound, so he could get that intro and then have the heavier electric guitar parts in the middle.
That actually was going to be my next point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and what I'm going to say you might have brought up next as well. Besides the Parker Fly point.
Yeah.
On another guitar bass point.
Oh, yeah.
And stop me if you were going to bring it up.
Which I probably was.
On this album, Dave is playing a lot of broken chords. He's playing essentially octaves. So he's playing the low string of a power chord, a triad, that is, and then just playing the octave up and muting the middle string.
Sorry about this, everyone. he's off again.
He's off.
He's gone off again.
He's off. But, no, stop.
Oh, no.
Stop. I actually don't want you to stop.
No, which I will not.
That's the start of Scar Tissue, is that kind of
active technique. Yeah. Should we call it a technique?
We can.
Yes.
That technique is the start of Scar Tissue. It's a lot of what John does on his solo albums.
Now stop going on about John.
I'm taking it back because John didn't do it on Blood Sugar or Mother's Milk. So Dave is the first person. He does it on Warped. The chorus on Warped is that octave technique.
Yes.
It's in Deep Kick. It's the solo on My Friends, and it comes back into the album later on. I just thought I'd bring up the fact that Dave is using a technique which John uses a lot later. And I don't think Dave gets enough credit. Sometimes he doesn't get enough credit.
Well, I think you're right. May I say it's a very good point. As technical as it was, it's a very good point. And it's important for everyone to give Dave credit because this is a good album. It's a relevant album. It's an album which, at the time, was all they could do. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. No. I mean,
they've got a psychedelic together, heavy guitar player.
Yeah, and it got them as a band of three men. Let's disregard Navarro because he was to go. But in terms of Kiedis, Smith, and Flea, it got them through those years and enabled them to carry on. Otherwise, they may not have been able to do that. Well, that the losing Frusciante after Blood Sugar would have been the end of many a good band.
So. I just need to say one thing to you.
Please do.
Stop talking about Frusciante.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, but you're right because what year was Blood Sugar? Was that 91?
It was either 91 or 92. Yeah. I'm going to say 91.
And Cali was 99. So you've got 8 years there. If they didn't have this album.
Wow.
There would be no Chili's now.
But that said, knowing what we know now.
What do we know now?
And the passion of.
Oh, yeah, Josh is here. Album's awful.
What they've been through together, the three of them.
Think of Chad as almost a founding member at this point.
Of course. There's just no way they would ever give up. They're so passionate about playing music together.
Even though Anthony can't sing, Josh can't.
Well, never. That's now. We're not allowed to say that.
Okay. Shall we? Oh, I just want to say one other thing about My Friends.
Oh yeah, please.
I love the lyrics on this song.
Yes.
I love the ex-girlfriend called me up.
Oh god, stuff, the lyrics. Touching.
But also the to give your love no matter what. I think is a fantastic piece of lyrical writing.
It is unbelievably. Yeah, I totally. It's the lyrics are fantastic. The vocal delivery from Kiedis is absolutely fantastic, and this is one of the reasons. I said it earlier. why this album is so good. Because Blood Sugar was Keith's finding his vocal chops.
He's certainly more
advanced. Now we hear him singing songs like this.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. He's a good singer at this stage.
Yeah, he is.
And he's singing stuff which previously was,
he couldn't have sung that on Blood Sugar or before. I think his height of his singing powers
was yet to come,
by the way. But yeah, this was very good.
This was extremely good.
Okay, so next one.
Next up,
P.
We have, I believe, yes, it's a coffee shop.
Oh, okay.
So it is, in fact, coffee shop.
Coffee shop.
Well, we've just listened to it.
We have. What did you make of it?
Well, another very good song. Which, for an album which has got a bad reputation, we're getting a lot of very positive feedback. However
what?
I think it does highlight some issues.
Go on.
Internally at the time.
Talk to me.
I wasn't there.
No.
I was 14. Never heard of them.
Where were you?
Then?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to go into detail about my own specific location.
Well, don't give your PIN number away, but...
No.
You were in Hythe. You were in Hythe, weren't you?
I was in...
Hythe, Southampton, Hampshire.
Hythe, Alabama.
England.
Yeah. No. It does for me. It highlights issues. And everyone says the Swan struggled. I think he did a great job on this album, and this song illustrates it for me perfectly. His vocal delivery is nothing like we've ever heard.
No, it's a great chorus.
Particularly, exactly. But in the verses, in the verses, you hear him just adapting to what he's being given.
Well, they've got an octave effect going on the verses, haven't they? And you can hear. I think it's. Yeah. Not listening to it on headphones now, I think it's panned slightly left to right because it's very.
Yeah, it is.
It's experimental.
Yeah.
Definitely. I've not heard anything like that.
And I don't think. I think this was him learning on the job because by his own admission, he was blagging it for the first few years of the band, but this is 10, 15 years into the existence of the band. I think he was becoming more comfortable with his position, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
But even so, he was out of his comfort zone here and doing a good job with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the verses are different from anything else we've ever heard. And again, that's probably, if you're coming off the back of Blood Sugar going into this, this isn't going to be your favourite song on the album at all. And in fact, it's not mine. It's one of my, I think it's one of the weakest. And it reminds me of Get On Top of Cali, which I think they've done some great. The track listing reminds me a lot of Cali. You've got four great songs, and then you've got this, which to me sounds like a bit like filler.
Mm.
And they're similar kind of just funk. This is hard.
Yeah, it's hard. There's some flourishes in it, though.
I don't like the overdubs from Dave. They're panned. You've got the rhythm guitar. You've got one guitar over that side going ding, 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 ding. The other guitar over that side going glam. I don't like that. The chorus is great, but it's certainly not my.
It's not one of your faves.
It's not one of my favourites. I've written something down. Certainly, I've written number 5. Get On Top, and it's the same place in the album as I said. The bass though. The bass outro, I think, is really good.
Oh, yeah, and I think...
It's much like the live Flea stuff that he plays.
I think that's important to recognise the fact that Flea is finally... he flourishes on several occasions on the album, but not in a way... Certainly in no way, shape or form as much as you would have expected after...
Blood Sugar.
Not only Blood Sugar, but all of the other albums.
Well, Slap and Pop was the approach for the first... four albums.
Yeah.
And then that went away on Blood Sugar.
It did.
And it went away on Mother's Milk a bit.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot on Mother's Milk. Yeah. And this is not that. There is a bit of slap and pop in this song.
Yeah, there is. There's bits and pieces of Flea. But
that outro to me sounds like it's just an improvised outro and Flea's doing what we might do live and they kept it in. And I like it for that reason. The feedback outro. Well, it should just finish, though. This is...
It's an issue.
It's a massive issue with this album for me, actually.
Yeah.
From now on, I think,
yeah,
you're going to have a load of songs that don't finish when they should finish.
Yeah.
That should just finish. Boom. And then you've got all that feedback from Dave. And
yeah.
Just
Yeah, I think there are. I think you're right. Finishing issues are a problem on this album. But are they actually representative of, you know, more pertinent internal issues within the band? They couldn't make decisions. They were unable.
Rick Rubin should have said it.
Yeah, it was his job.
Rick Rubin should have said. End it on that chord, yeah, and don't have Dave's guitar feeding back all the time.
No one within the band. The Swan wasn't feeling confident. Flea was on the back.
Dave's not going to make massive decisions.
Dave was obviously coming in being quite overbearing as it was. And that's part of the where the problem lies, as far as I can see.
Mm. Yeah.
And obviously, Chad's just going to beat away in the background, being ever reliable as he is.
Is it okay if I speak about something guitar-wise?
What's the next song?
No. I don't know, but I just do want to say something guitar-wise.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you should better have.
On the build-up to the last chorus on this song, instead of what would normally happen, where the bass changes up and changes notes, and the guitar holds the chord, for example, in the build-up for the last chorus of Fortune Faded, where the guitar is holding an F-sharp minor, F-sharp power chord,
yeah,
and the bass is running up. On this song, the bass is just running a wah-wah one note, and the guitar is doing the running up, and that's an anomaly. That's not normally what happens.
Certainly in songwriting. Important to mention.
Mm. I did have to get that in.
Well, I was wondering, and I was going to bring it up myself
about that
when we were going to talk about a wah-wah one note.
Yeah,
and yeah. It was now.
Well, it was on. It was on. I just wrote it down while I listened to the song. Yeah, so.
No, we've done that, haven't we? I wrote it down as well when I listened to that song.
Luckily, I got it out of the way.
Thanks for bringing it up.
No problem. Let's move on to the next song, which this time I think is P.
Fuck you, asshole. You homophobic redneck dick. Big and tough and macho, you can kick my ass. So fucking what? So fucking what? So fucking what? So fucking what?
That was P.
P.
I think you're a bigger fan of this song than I am, so...
You're not a fan of it?
I'm not a fan of it, but I think you're a bigger fan.
Well, I just feel like it's an important song for several reasons. For me, it emphasises the gap that had been left by Frusciante. It emphasises the position of Kiedis at the time in terms of his inability to produce material, perhaps. Maybe not just him, maybe as a band. You know, whenever it feels like a song that wouldn't be on an album that was bursting with possibilities.
No, exactly. I completely agree with that. It's filler. It's a song about Flea getting his ass kicked by some rednecks.
Well,
it's 2 minutes of filler, and...
It's a song which says a lot about Flea in terms of his feelings.
Yes, his attitude to life.
To life,
yeah.
to masculinity, to confrontation.
Oh, exactly. You're bigger than me, fuck you. If you beat me up, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm not going to get involved. It actually, although it sounds like a throwaway song, I think it's far from that, and Flea would, I feel like he would testify to that. It's important to him.
I think you're right.
And it shows where the band were at that time. They couldn't actually write a full album of songs they wanted to put out.
Yes. I completely agree with everything you've just said. I think it's played, it sounds like it's played on a nylon string, 6-string acoustic guitar.
Which is absolutely fine by me.
Hmm. And I will have to acquiesce to Flea's choice.
Do you agree? Carry on.
And carry on we will next week, as the brothers get increasingly drunk and Sam becomes overexcited about the technical guitar point.
The E-bow is something that a guitarist will hold. Sorry, it's a guitar technical point. Sam, would you like to...
Oh, sorry. You just woke me up.
Yeah.
See you next time on Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers podcast.
My God, you are my dog. You kept me close, love never lost. I called you here, but you said fuck off. Said your brother's a